Welcome to Light Bites, an occasional podcast from Leeds Institute for Teaching Excellence at the University of Leeds.
Episodes will be hosted by members of the Light team.
And we'll be showcasing the scholarship of teaching and learning from across the university.
Hello, you're listening to Light Bites. I'm Robert Averies, Research and Impact Officer at the Leeds Institute for Teaching Excellence. Two for the price of one today. Because we're joined by not one, but two Light Fellows who are halfway through their two-year Light Fellowship, which is called Assessment Flexibility to Embed Real Professional Practice. Good afternoon, Manoj Ravi, Mohsen Besharat. How are you both?
Very good, thank you.
Very good, thanks.
Very good, thanks. Excited to get started.
Yeah, absolutely. Indeed.
Excellent. So why don't we begin by you telling us a little bit about what you do at the University of Leeds?
Good afternoon, Robert. Thank you for having us on this podcast session. So my name is Mohsen Besharat. I'm a curriculum redefined lecturer at School of Civil Engineering, joined University of Leeds 2022. I'm also program leader for three undergraduate programs, civil and structural engineering, civil and environmental engineering, and civil engineering. And yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Robert. Delighted to be on the podcast here with you. Look forward to discussing what we've really gathered in terms of data and findings over the course of the last year. So I'm Manoj Ravi over from the School of Chemical and Process Engineering. So I work as a lecturer there and, like Mohsen, joined the university in 2022 as a curriculum redefined lecturer.
Fantastic. Let's get on to talking about your fellowship then. What motivated you to undertake this piece of research?
Great. So there are a lot of motivations, but for me, actually, I have background in industry and also in academia. And when I was working in industry, I observed a lot of like graduates that they come to industry, they are struggling to use their skills developed during education in terms of the communication, developing the report, doing the work itself, because, you know, in academia, mostly we teach students to focus on a perfect piece of the work to get the final mark. And so that motivated me to look at the gap between this kind of approach we have in academia and the requirement of industry to see how we can improve students to be more work ready.
Yeah, just building on what Mohsen said there, I think my interests were very similar as well. So in terms of when students are going out there, there is this general narrative which is painted outside of higher education that students aren't necessarily ready to take on the challenges of the professional world. But having said that, when we think of it from within academia and within higher education circles, the whole concept of authentic assessments has been around for a really long time. So it was that dichotomy which I wanted to address, saying we as educators are saying that we're making assessments increasingly authentic across all disciplines. But despite our claims of doing that, it's not being met by the same opinion on the outside. So what is the reason, or potentially multiple reasons, but what are these and how could they be addressed going forward? That was the real thing that I want to hammer in on over the course of this fellowship.
Fantastic. Could you explain to listeners a little bit about how authentic assessment delivery differs from authentic assessment design?
So the authentic assessment design is mostly focusing on the design of the assessment brief or work itself that mimics the work in people do in the professional world. But that's the brief which we deliver to students in order to start to work that on that. The delivery side of that starts right after that when students start to work on their assessment. So the whole process from reading the brief to develop the work itself, to communicate with other peers, to communicate with instructors, to go through different resources to understand how to solve that problem, and also to the final delivery point is the delivery of an assessment that we have in mind.
Would you say then that the relevance of your fellowship and its findings can transcend your discipline and impact authentic assessment delivery in other disciplines?
Oh, yes, very much so. Absolutely. Because if you look at a lot of the recently published pedagogic research and scholarship articles, potentially critiquing some of the use of the term authentic assessment because it has become a buzzword, but it's potentially not being used in the real depth and richness that, you know, the term encompasses. And that's where we were looking at it in terms of this design and delivery component, as you referred to, Robert. So where we're not just looking at the question or the task which has been given to the student, which might or might not resemble to some extent the challenge of a professional, but it's about how does the student actually go about addressing that challenge. So if they have a couple of weeks to come up with a report, poster, whatever the assessment is, how much of that working practice is similar to how a professional would work on a similar challenge over 2 weeks' time? And that, when I say professional, pretty much sweeps across all disciplines. So it's not just engineers or scientists, but any discipline, which is why I think the project has relevance for everyone.
Fantastic. You're 1 year into your fellowship and you have preliminary findings. Looking forward to hearing about what they are and how that's going to inform the second year of your fellowship. Before we go into findings, I'm sure that listeners are really keen to hear about how you've got to the point that you're at now. How then did you go about research design and conducting research up until this point?
Well, Robert, this is a 2 year fellowship, which the first year is the planning phase and the second year would be the pilot phase. So we are at the end of the first year. For the planning phase, we went after all the ethical approval and this sort of stuff, we started to do a survey in the Faculty of Engineering and Physical Science. And the survey was designed based on a couple of criteria. For example, we have something which is called Employer Indicator Framework in university, developed based on a project with industrial and external partners, which gave us a good insight at what are the main criteria that employers are looking when they are searching for a graduate to employ. So we took something like peer review, the commercial awareness, reflective practices, engaging with multiple conflicting requirements, like main takeaways from that project. Also, we look at the broader like assessment practice that can replicate the professional practices in order to bring something also from that, like time and project management, controlling the stress, anxiety, the passion and accomplishment that comes after doing the project, the creativity, and also we looked at the a potential solution for that, which is assessment flexibility. We embedded these points into the survey, and also so most of these things were embedded through a Likert scale questionnaire. And then we added one open-end text-based question also in order to have more in-depth insight into the perception of students regarding the assessment and also these criteria. So that phase, as I mentioned, has been done. We have responses from students. We have analyzed them, which we will speak about them more in-depth today. And the second phase, the pilot phase, starts from the next academic year, 2024-25, when we, for now, we have verified three modules in undergraduate and also postgraduate levels in order to apply this concept in the assessment. And we are assessing two additional modules to potentially get that to five modules to pilot this. And yeah, we are here to discuss findings from the student survey, mostly from the planning phase.
Great. So could you give us a sense then, Mohsen, of the kinds of questions students have asked?
Yeah, indeed. So we ask questions, like I said, in terms of the criterion about how much the submission deadline stress you. We mentioned questions like to what extent do you feel you can express creativity in your coursework assessment? How much flexibility do you currently have in your assessment? Also, we try to understand what is the student's perception in terms of the incentivizing the flexibility for like something like early submission as something that can be a flexibility. Do they prefer that through bonus marks or do they prefer through the feedback? Also, we had some, because, you know, we mentioned the authenticity can be through the design and also delivery. So we had some questions in order to verify the design side of the authenticity in terms of to what extent students are using different resources for their coursework, how they feel in terms of learning on the go, and these kind of questions. And also another part of that, like I mentioned, was an open-end question, which was reflecting on a recent coursework submission, comment on what changes could be made to make the assessment less stressful for you and that would have helped you come up with a more creative and high-quality submission. Yeah, those were some sample questions.
Brilliant. That's a really nice segue, because I was just about to ask, what did you find out in this phase of data collection?
Thank you, Robert. Yeah, lots of interesting findings that's come through. And I'll probably go back again to that, to the two branches that we were looking at initially, which was authenticity in design and authenticity in delivery. Student survey across all engineering schools and the sciences within the Faculty of Engineering and Physical Sciences pretty much unanimously say that students are indeed using a diverse range of resources to prepare their assessments, for instance, for coursework. So it's not that they're relying on just lecture notes to prepare things, be it posters, reports, whatever form of assessment. So we're really doing a good job in terms of embedding authenticity in design on that front. There's still some scope for improvement in terms of more systems thinking competencies. And by systems thinking, I mean bringing together various skills. So it's not just considering the technical aspect of a question or a task, but it's potentially colliding those or the technical factor alongside economic considerations, business considerations, social considerations, and so on. So on that front, there's still some scope for improvement. But by and large, authenticity in design, as it has been referred to in literature as well, we're doing a very good job. However, as we'd expected, authenticity in delivery has a lot to do or a lot to improve in that sense. Because, for instance, when we ask students, how often do you engage in peer review and peer feedback? It was a very low percentage of students who said that they often or, you know, pretty much always engage in peer review practice. And so consequently, what this gets to is the fact that, yes, as educators, we are designing assessment questions that are more or less resembling challenges in the professional world, because students within the same survey also agree to the fact that they're challenged to learn on the go by these assessments. So it's not that assessments are inauthentic or unauthentic, whichever way you call it, by design, but it's more that the environment that we're setting up for them to go address this particular challenge is quite rigid. You know, it does not give them the freedom to be creative, and it's potentially there where we need to concentrate more of our efforts to say, well, how do we kind of remove that rigid structure, embrace flexibility, and allow students to be more creative, engage in peer review and peer feedback, because that's what people will do, graduates would do once they take up any job, again, irrespective of which discipline they're going to go into, because they're not going to work in silos. Teamwork is important. So it's how do we, you know, create that environment, which is where kind of all the findings came together.
Just wanted to build on this in terms of my experience working in industry. It's very normal kind of approach and working routine in industry for people to interact with each other on a daily basis, to give each other feedback. So that shows in industry people have more freedom, and that freedom gives more passion to kind of show their creativity, show their self in working in different kind of problems, you know, because the problems in industry is not like specific problems that they have all similar answers. You face with different kind of challenges And you need to be creative. You need to be like a good problem solver in order to understand how to answer those questions, how to kind of find a solution for those problems. And this is what we want to improve in terms of the education for students to interact with each other, as Manoj mentioned, not to work in isolation, but to get out, to get feedback from instructor, from peers, and use all this interactivity to be more authentic and to find solution for like very challenging problems that makes them completely ready when they get into the professional career.
Great. And I'll say this because I've read your journal submission, which I'd point listeners towards reading. If you'd like to do that, please get in touch with Mohsen or Manoj, and they'll point you towards where to find it and when it's going to be published. The three, I suppose, teleological aims of assessment that you talk about quite a lot: creativity, innovation, and passion. Is it the case then that these aims, which link explicitly to the realities of the workplace, should be considered throughout the assessment design and delivery process, not only in your discipline, but has relevance to others too?
Absolutely, Robert. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, and it links in very well with what Mohsen was just talking about. So, you know, broad brush, if I were to stereotype based on the responses that we've got from students, again, this is very broad brush kind of picture making based on the responses that we've got, is that as an engineering or a physical sciences student, or even more broadly, we're asking them in terms of coursework, here's a question which more or less resembles a professional challenge. So they're going about saying, okay, we've got a professional challenge to address, but I've got 2 weeks to produce a report where I cannot share it with my peers because we'd run into academic integrity issues, and this is an individual piece of assessment. And I have 2 weeks as a solid deadline. I need to get as much work as possible done over the course of, say, the first week, week and a half. So I give myself enough time towards the end of the deadline to perfect that document, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, look at the formatting issues, and then hand it in. That is pretty much the majority of student responses, if I had to stereotype it into what kind of assessment experience they're having in terms of that entire assessment cycle. That is the experience that they're having on the whole, which is chalk and cheese when you compare it to what Mohsen was just talking about with what happens in the professional world. So if you were working out there and your boss calls you over and says you have 2 weeks to address this, you're not going to be doing it in exactly the same way that the student has done it. You'd probably take a day or two to curate some data, look at it individually, but then you'd go about sharing the draft with your peers, potentially with your seniors, try and get some feedback, and almost value multiple creative outputs as opposed to just perfecting one piece of document without even knowing how much value it has. So it's kind of addressing that through the three words that you brought in there, which is about, yes, being innovative, feeling more passionate about it, and embedding that creativity. So it's valuing creativity ahead of perfection, which unfortunately are rigid structures, rigid assessment structures tend to promote.
I think it relates to what I was reading in your manuscript around, in the survey, many more students referred to a sense of accomplishment when submitting assessments or assignments than did students who had a sense of passion or a sense of purpose. Interestingly, you spoke about sense of accomplishment more as sense of relief. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a bit about why you did that and some insight into that interpretation?
Perfect. Sure. So, I mean, when we were designing the survey, it was, again, because we were thinking of authenticity in delivery. So we were thinking about what is the lived experience of the student when they're preparing the assessment deliverable, alongside what is that overriding emotion, let's say, once they hand the deliverable in. And kind of building those two questions in, which is, well, how do you feel during the assessment deliverable period, and then how do you feel after submitting the assessment piece, kind of lends itself a little bit from Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner's concept of, well, experienced happiness, but there's also the self-remembering happiness of, well, what do you remember about a period of time in terms of when you were happy? And what we found from the survey results, as you just alluded there, Robert, is that a high percentage, I think close to 70% top of my head, say, well, they felt a great sense of accomplishment when they handed in the deliverable. And then when we asked them, did you feel a sense of passion or purpose when working on the assessment deliverable, that number jumps way down from about 70% to around about 40%. Which is why we thought, well, so there is a high chance that a number of these students who are not feeling that sense of passion or purpose when working on the assessment deliverable, but have this overriding positive emotion when they submit the piece, is largely because they could be engaging with assessment for assessment's sake. They're here to obtain a degree, and passing an assessment is an important component of it. And they're happy that they've managed to get their submission in on time. So it's again trying to see, how do we address that divide? If 70% are feeling that sense of hopefully authentic accomplishment again, that the same 70% also feel that sense of passion and purpose when working on it.
Yeah, and you know, this links very well to something that we touched a little bit for in terms of the guidelines that actually we provide to students. So the guidelines we provide, it seems to be mostly restrictive, because we ask students to focus on something like an authentic task. Having said that, I think the guidelines should be clear enough to pave the way for students in order to provide a work that they can express themselves. But at the same time, should it be very descriptive to completely limit them on a specific framework? And in this way, that improves the passion for students. They will be able to show some creativity and go through some solutions that might be even beyond the requirement of the task, more creative, more challenging when we give them freedom.
Great, and that reminds me of your project title and the importance of flexibility, right?
Exactly, Robert. So making that transition from rigid structures, which is what I've been talking about, to embracing more flexibility. And there are multiple means that we as educators can embed flexibility. So one, as I was just commenting on, would be through flexible deadlines and how we could potentially incentivize student submissions according to these flexible deadlines. Working on to the same time scales I was commenting on earlier, if it's a 2-week submission, can we build in an opportunity where a student is able to hand in a draft 1 week in, and we as instructors can give them feedback that they can effectively feed forward into their summative submission? So incentivizing in terms of flexible deadlines is one option, but that's not the only option. The other one, which we've also kind of wondered a little bit about, is about assessment format. So yes, the challenge is set in terms of the assessment task, but it need not always be done through a report. It need not always be done through a presentation. It could be done, for instance, through a pitch deck, which might be more commonplace in industry or startups. So again, offering that flexibility to students, saying, this is the learning outcome that we want you to meet, but how you're going to demonstrate it is up to you. The format is up to you, is for the student to choose. And likewise, with what skills they want to emphasize in terms of linking in well with the surfacing skills project here at Leeds as well, saying, this is the technical skill that we do want you to address, because that is a hardcore learning outcome. But what are the other skills that go along with it? Offer the flexibility to students to choose that.
Did anything in particular shine through in the open text question of the survey?
Yeah, a couple of things that stood out, Robert. One was the importance that students associate with timely feedback. I think it's something that we speak a lot about as educators, but tend to easily underestimate how much importance students really give to feedback, and particularly formative feedback. So not this decoupling between formative assessment and summative assessment, but if students can get feedback on a draft version that they're going to hand in for a summative piece eventually, they do tend to really appreciate that. That was a reoccurring theme on the open text question.
Yeah, and on that context, I was listening to one episode of Light Bites by Jiani Liu, the title was Assessment Literacy and Student Success in the context of language education. So it was a different discipline rather than engineering. And interestingly, the finding was that students are asking for more contact and also feedback related to the assessment literacy. And so just wanted to mention this, that that fellowship somehow has the same finding in terms of the feedback, similar to what I found from our survey.
Mm. And the second point I wanted to touch on, yes, we need to be more flexible in terms of our, it can be marking schemes, rubrics, the assessment briefs, but it's also that delicate trade-off, because when we were looking at student responses across all year groups, so starting from first year of undergraduate study through to postgraduate level, we see this delicate balance between the fact that an assessment brief must have reasonably enough information in there so that it's clear what the expectations of the assessment are to the students. However, it should not be overly prescriptive to the extent that it stifles creativity. So it's about getting that delicate balance right. And when we ran reflexive thematic analysis over the responses that we received for that open text question, that theme was very obvious. But that's where, again, students say that please engage in partnerships with us in terms of whether it be assessment design or even more high-level curriculum design. It's kind of taking students on board, looking at what those mutual expectations are, and how do we give them, as I said, the best possible environment for them to thrive. The question, the authenticity in the question is there, but how do we create the environment for them to thrive, be more creative, and come up with a high-quality submission.
Fantastic. And it's great to hear you referring to your use of reflexive thematic analysis there. That certainly came through in reading your manuscript, especially when you're talking about what I referred to previously about how you interpret some of the things that people said, whether in the LOCUT survey or in the open text question, for example, around accomplishment and actually relief, which I suppose brings us on now to what I'm sure listeners at home or at work are interested in knowing. How is this going to inform your work going forwards and your pilot phase in year two of your fellowship?
As I mentioned before, the pilot phase starts from the October this year, so academic year 2024-25. We have a couple of modules in both undergraduate and postgraduate, which means the taught MSc programs we have selected for this pilot phase. We are trying to introduce some ideas from this flexible assessment and also the perception of the assessment we got from students to provide more feedback, more peer review opportunities, and also flexible assessment hand-in dates with the incentive of providing feedback. These are like initial thoughts that we have in terms of getting from the survey to the modules and to apply in the pilot phase.
Sure. To just back up on what Mohsen said, so we've identified these modules where we're going to pilot flexible assessments, and we'd be collecting some more data in terms of journey experiences to go back and compare with the larger student survey that we've, of course, just run. So that would be the primary source of data, and trying to, hopefully spread the word and get more educators across the university take on such practice. And in that sense, we've been having conversations with assessment strategy leads, both at within the faculty of EPS, but also more broadly at the university level, to see how our findings can feed into upcoming policy guidance.
Excellent. And just a note to listeners, Manoj and Mohsen will be coming back in a year's time to share these findings from implementing the pilot. And personally, really looking forward to hearing about how that turns out for you both. You mentioned, Mohsen, your plans for disseminating in addition to this podcast and achieving impact. Could you tell us a bit more about your plans going forwards?
For dissemination, as you previously mentioned, we already wrote a manuscript submitted. which is under review currently, and we hope to get a result for that soon to share with listeners. Also, we have planned in order to publish, kind of not publish, but participate in a couple of conferences in Europe and also abroad in probably in America and Asia, to be engaged in different conversation, not only in scale of the Euro, but in other scales, to understand how these concepts of flexible assessment have been explored and have conversation with other colleagues in different educational settings to get their feedback, to see how we can improve this and get all this to a level, as Manoj mentioned, to have more educators, more lecturers and instructors on board with the idea.
Great. And are there any particular strategic frameworks at the university that you'd be looking to inform?
Absolutely, Robert. The one we've identified is the Access and Student Success strategy. It links in very well with some of the points that we've just mentioned here on the podcast as well. So particularly the attainment and the progression pillars, because we've collected data, as I stated, across all year groups, we really can look into that granular level detail of what we need to be doing across different year groups to help them progress and attain. So those are the things that we are looking at the moment.
Okay, and just taking a step back then, how's the overall experience been for you both so far in your Light Fellowship?
Brilliant, Robert, if I had to put it in one word. I think just the experience of, you know, systematically investigating a pedagogic research question was very interesting. Certainly learned a lot because, yeah, I come from an engineering background, so do not quite have that hat as a pedagogic researcher or as a scholarship person. But still kind of going through the data, going through the entire experience has been a rich learning curve. I've had networking opportunities, a lot of them through Light, so I have to thank Light for that. Through talking to engineers, also some staff interviews, which we did not mention over the course of this podcast, but it's data that we'll be looking at going forward. So yeah, just the fact that Light has given me the time and space to think about the project and potentially influence the practice of others is just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, same here. It was an excellent experience for me too, and a big learning curve in terms of learning how to work with qualitative data, because we are engineers, literally. So working with digits and quantitative data is something normal for us, but qualitative data is a big learning curve for us. How to go to different thematic analysis methods, the reflexive thematic analysis, how to analyze the data that is not in digits. It was very interesting learning curve. Though the challenge of time was a bit evident for myself because I have other commitments to do in conjunction of this fellowship, but overall it was brilliant experience. And the support I had from the Light, also other, as Manoj mentioned, opportunities for networking and speak with people from other disciplines was amazing, yeah.
I'm really glad that for both of you, stepping into the world of social science research has been so far an enriching experience. It's not unusual for it to be a difficult process in terms of adapting to, in many ways, very different way of seeing data and interpreting data and generating findings from that. It's great to hear that learning how to apply reflexive thematic analysis in particular has been enriching to you. I know that my colleague Lucy has been in touch with you, supporting you with that, and is currently developing a resource on reflexivity for Light Fellows to use and anyone doing pedagogic research. Great. What advice then would you have for other people that are starting out in their scholarship of teaching and learning or pedagogic research projects?
Mostly some suggestions rather than advice. You know, like I said, It makes sense for people to prepare for that experience in terms of the learning and reading some resources before going into the work itself. And also be aware of some challenges. Because, you know, when we are dealing with this social science approach, we mostly go through the route of survey and questionnaire and this sort of stuff. And in higher education, I think we have the survey fatigue somehow for students. We do a lot of survey and evaluation. So I would say for someone that tries to enter actually this realm, be aware of that survey fatigue, not to push students with a lot of like different surveys, because that reduces the number of the respondents and diminishes the value of the survey.
Yeah, it can definitely be a challenge. Another shameless plug, another colleague of mine, Izzy's been developing a resource hosted on our website, which has a range of qualitative data collection methods. So for people that want to consider something else, another way of learning about an issue, that's definitely worth looking into and considering.
Perfect. Yeah, pretty much second what Mohsen has just said there in terms of more suggestions than advice, really. And since he's touched on more specific learnings in terms of the methodology and the findings for our project, I'd probably go more high level and say, again, more suggestions than advice would be to have bias towards action, especially if you are not from a very social sciences discipline. So in our case, for instance, as engineers stepping into a pedagogic research project, you can have that imposter syndrome, which comes up more than once throughout the entire project. So it's about having that bias towards action and continuing to look at data, feeling confident, and, you know, one tiny step forward. And we'll eventually, given us the results that we have in a year's time, and we look forward to seeing what the next year holds.
Great. Thanks so much. That is incredibly valuable feedback and suggestions for people that are considering undertaking a light fellowship or pedagogic research. And thanks to both of you for being such great Light Fellows so far. And I now speak for everybody at Light in saying that we're really excited to see what's in store in a second year of your fellowship. And again, I'll reiterate to everyone listening that Manoj and Mohsen are very happy to be contacted if you have any questions or would like access to the journal article, or would like to apply the findings from the fellowship into their own work. So thanks again to you both.
Thank you very much, Robert. Absolute pleasure doing this. Yes, if you want to get in touch with us, by all means do, because as we said, we all here are passionate about student education. So if whatever work we've done can feed into your practice, we'd be more than happy to see that happen. Thank you very much.
Yeah, same for me. I would be very glad to connect with people if they have any question. Would be really interested to respond and to join forces in the mission that we have in order to educate a generation that could be useful for our world and also to have great contributions. Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you. And thanks to everybody listening to this episode of Light Bites. Just a reminder that we'll be revisiting the final findings of this fellowship this time next year. Thanks for listening and see you next time.